Sometimes what we need of God comes in the form of a story. A person, a woman, or a man who shows us a way when we needed a way. A person who shows us that we are not alone, never alone, that we are always and ever surrounded by brethren. So I offer you a story. It is a story submerged within the deep and mist-covered past of the people of Israel from a time of myth and miracle, a time of kings and prophets and giants. It's a story of a woman named Michal. Now, Michal was the daughter of the first king of Israel, and she grew up in the capital and in its courts. But even though she was the daughter of a king, Michal was in love with a commoner. More than a commoner, in fact, she was in love with a nobody. The youngest son of a poor family from a nowhere town called Bethlehem. But in her eyes, this young man was ruddy and handsome. He was strong and crafty, and he was a musician and a warrior and a poet, and he had slain a giant with just a slingshot. And to Michal, he was lovely, and she did love him so. Now, Michal's father, the king, he was a paranoid man, always plotting and scheming, forging this alliance and breaking that one, advancing this subordinate and imprisoning that one, because he was obsessed with the idea that people were plotting to overthrow his rule. He saw conspiracies around every corner, whispered conversations in every sound. And Michal's father was particularly suspicious of this young man his daughter loved. This young man who was a celebrity at court, who everybody loved, and who seemed to have boundless ambition. And who knew? Who knows? If he was bold enough to topple a giant, maybe someday he would be bold enough to try to topple a king. Michal was in love with this young man, and her father was suspicious of him. So it is difficult to imagine with what joy and surprise Michal must have felt when one day, like a bolt of lightning out of the blue sky, her father announces in court that she is to be married. And what's more, she is going to be married to this young man who she loved so much. Michal, the daughter of the king, was to marry her handsome and heroic love and then live happily ever after. It was all like a fairy tale. But the king said, there was just one little thing that this nobody would have to do to prove himself, to prove that he was worthy to be a part of the king's family. This man, this famous court celebrity, giant-slaying hero, who everybody seemed to love almost as much as they loved their rightful king, he would need to prove himself. He would need to prove that he was worthy by slaying 100 enemy soldiers, personally. Michal's joy turned to terror. Her dream of living with her beloved turned into a nightmare. Her father had betrayed her. And what's more, he had used her. He had used her love as a way of luring this man into a trap. Her beloved was being sent on a fool's errand to personally slay 100 enemy soldiers. It was impossible. This was an errand her father had intended to be the death of him. Now, if this young man had any sense, he would have left and never come back again. And Michal's beloved did leave, and I doubt she expected she would ever see him again. But then, beyond all expectation, beyond all reason, far sooner than anyone could have imagined, Michal's beloved comes striding back into court, as cocky as a peacock, carrying with him war trophies. 200 enemy soldiers is what he had brought. He had personally slain 200 enemy soldiers, and he had the proof of it. And there in open court, he had met the king's dowry price. The king's plan had backfired. He was more famous than ever. This young man was more beloved in the court than ever, and he was married to the daughter of the king in the wedding of the year. He was in line for the throne. Michal and her beloved beamed with triumph, and the king seethed with murderous anger at this young man who had shown him up. And so that very night, before Michal and her beloved could even warm their marriage bed, that very night, her father sent some hired men in the middle of the night, sent some men to go get this young man, to get him up out of bed and to bring him before the king. But when the king's men came banging on the door to take him away, Michal was ready. Michal was ready. As they were banging on the front door, she was lowering her beloved out a window in the back. She lowered him with a rope down out of the window, and he escaped off into the night, safely away into the darkness. And then, for good measure, she went and she got a statue, and she put that into their bed, and she got a wig of goat's hair and put that onto the statue and said to the men, "Well, you can come in, but he can't go with you. He's too sick. You can go see for yourself. He can't even respond. He's so sick in bed, he can't possibly come with you right now." And so they reluctantly went away, their murderous intentions to kill this famous young giant-slaying throne usurper foiled, the king's plans derailed. Michal had outsmarted them all, and her beloved was safe. Now when Michal's father heard of it, he was furious. He confronted her and demanded to know how she could have betrayed their family, because now her beloved was on the loose with a sizable contingent of military men who were loyal to him alone. This would mean a civil war. And there was. A civil war began. Michal's father on the one hand, her beloved on the other, each vying to control the throne of Israel with her caught in the middle. In fact, Michal's father just married her off to another man. Married her off to another man whose loyalty in the civil war the king purchased at the price of his daughter. And so Michal was sent away from her home to go live in the home of another man, to live as the wife of another man whom she did not love. Now Michal waited for her beloved to come and rescue her from this arranged marriage. But he didn't come. And Michal began to hear that the war was going very well for her beloved. Every day his forces grew stronger and the king's grew weaker. And yet, still, he never came. Then one day, Michal learned that her father's army had been routed, and he himself had been killed. And yet, still, her beloved didn't come. And then Michal learned that all of her brothers were dead, and that her beloved was the undisputed king of Israel. And yet, her beloved did not come to reclaim her. Why? Why had he abandoned her? Lonely months turned into benighted years passing. Why had her beloved abandoned her? What could have explained this? Had the burden of the war or the hardship of ruling the kingdom simply consumed all of his attention? Well, one day, an unceremonious number of years later, one day her beloved did come to get her. Well, he sent an assistant. And Michal returned to court, returned to the home she had grown up in. She saw her beloved sitting on the throne that her father had once sat on. And sitting at his side was another woman. And Michal understood. He had married another woman. In fact, he had married six other women in the meantime. While Michal had waited faithfully hoping to be reunited with her beloved, he had married six other women. Michal was one of seven wives to her beloved, and if that were not enough of an insult to her love, she came to understand why it was that she had been summoned back. It was not out of any love for her that her beloved had sent for her. No, it was because someone had made note to the king that if Michal were to have any children, they would be successors to the prior king, and they might have a claim on the throne. So while he was at the business of consolidating his power, he might want to make sure that Michal wasn't around having children who could prove a threat to his rule. So then she was sent for. When the king remembered her maybe as being a threat to the throne, a threat to the throne that he only sat on because of her, because he had married into her family, that his life was only his own because she had saved his life, in fact. He was only the king because of her. But she understood now. Her beloved had never loved her at all. From the beginning, he had been trying to become the king. Michal's father was dead. Her brothers were dead, her whole family. She had spent years in exile and was now trapped in a sham marriage. And all of this, her whole life, her beautiful hopes, her devoted love, all of this had been in service of making this man who she had loved the king of Israel. And she had done so. He was the king. Who knows? Who knows what makes something the final straw? Who knows how a person who has suffered much at the hands of another finally decides that enough is enough? Who knows? But for Michal, the final straw did come. The man who she had once loved was off on one of his little quests. He was out fetching some ancient holy artifact, not out of piety, but because he thought that it would help him secure his throne. And he was successful in his quest, as he was successful in everything that he set his hand to. And this man, whom Michal had once so loved, came back into the city, back with his prize, and he entered the city dancing. He was dancing, stripped down to a loincloth, and he was dancing and whirling and prancing about in front of the whole city. This man whom Michal had once so loved, whose life she had saved, this man who was only the king because of her, here he was, dancing like a fool in front of the whole city, showing especial zest, it seems to her, gyrating in front of the servant girls who were lining the streets. She had once loved this young man. She despised him in her heart now. And so she confronted him. How the king of Israel honored himself today, uncovering himself before the eyes of the servants' maids, as any vulgar fellow might shamelessly expose himself. The Bible says that for the rest of her life, Michal never had any children. And scholars disagree about why this is, but I think that the answer is as simple as knowing the human heart. The love that Michal once had for this man died, and she despised him in her heart. And nevermore, for the rest of her life, would Michal go to bed with the king. Never again would she go to bed with the king. She left that to his other six wives, and to the servant girls, and to the wives of other men in the court. Michal would never again allow him, or anyone else for that matter, would never allow anyone else to dictate the course of her life and to decide for her the meaning of her living. She stood up to the most powerful man in the kingdom, the only man with any power in the kingdom, in fact, and she said, "No. No, I do not belong to you. You may not treat me however you wish. Sometimes what we need to hear from God comes in a story. A story about a person, a woman or a man who shows us a way when we had not seen a way. Someone who shows that we are not alone, never alone, that we are always and ever surrounded by our brothers and sisters. So I offer you a story. Submerged within the deep and mist-covered past of the people of Israel, the story of a woman who shaped the history of the people of God. A woman whose love was powerful enough to make a man a king. A woman whose pride was strong enough to stand up to that same power. Who chose to go her own way. Remember the story of Michal. Remember her courage. Remember her integrity. Remember that she has taught us that just because someone has all the power in the world, doesn't mean they're right. And it doesn't mean that even an ordinary person can't stand up to them. Remember the story of Michal. And if someday you must make a hard decision, if someday you must confront someone who has done wrong, if someday you must be brave, say a prayer of thanksgiving for Michal and do what is right.